Hey, everybody. Just want to tell you about this upcoming guest. It's going to be an awesome episode. You are not going to miss it. This is one of my very good friends from childhood, elementary school, high school, Sunday school. Her mother taught us. She told me sixth grade. I thought it was a little younger than that, but she's an amazing woman, amazing mother, extremely genuine, extremely authentic, and she helps children with multiple different, you know, areas of need. And she's so passionate about what she does. You can feel her energy, literally feel it during this episode. So stay tuned. Chandra Terramino is our guest, and it's going to be a great episode. You're not going to miss it. So stay tuned. See you soon.
All nurses to the nurses station.
Lawless country people, our real close family. Lately, some of my kinfolk don't get around too good, you see. When that doctor asked them, "Son, how'd you get in this condition?" They says, "Hey, sawbones, I'm just carrying on an old family tradition." Wanna know, doc, why do you think I got some pain in my joints from years of playing hard in this life that's too short? When that doctor asked me, "Son, how'd you get in this condition?" I says, "Hey, sawbones, I'm just carrying on it all." Tell me all about it, Doc.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hey Sawbones, My Story, My Passion. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Molly, orthopedic surgeon, entrepreneur, business owner, but most importantly, loving husband and father of three young, busy boys who are probably terrorizing the neighborhood right now as I speak, maybe building a fire in the backyard. But tonight, I'm really looking forward to my guest. This is a very dear friend of mine from way back, high school, the good old days of St. Hippolyte Church in Frenchtown, Pennsylvania. Her mother was our religious education teacher. I don't remember what grade it was, but she's an awesome woman. She's, you know, has two great children and an amazing career that really intrigues myself and a lot of people because it looks at the world a little bit differently. And but without further ado, Chandra, how are you?
I'm doing well. And thank you for that lovely introduction. I'm super excited to be on your show.
Yeah. So I don't remember what grade Mrs. Terramino taught. Was it third or fourth? Or do you remember?
I think it was sixth
grade. Wow.
Yeah, sixth grade.
Was that like the year? Did she give us the talk?
She did give us the talk, yes. One of the ones that gave us the talk. I think there are a couple of them, but...
I think Joni gave us the talk too, right? Yeah, your mom giving you the talk in front of a bunch of your friends, but...
I think my head was just down and...
But yeah, we've known each other for, gosh, probably 40 years at least, I would say.
At least, yeah. I think way back to first grade.
Yeah. But as we always do with the podcast, you know, you've seen a couple episodes. We talked a little bit off air before starting here. It'll be kind of a mutual interview. You'll ask me three business questions, three personal. We'll switch the tables. But before we do that, our guests, I always like to make sure that they get to know who you are, and kind of like from the 30,000 foot view, because we'll dive down into the details when we get into the questions. So who is Chandra?
Oh, that's a big question. So professionally, well, let me start with, I have a 13-year-old daughter and a 9-year-old son, so that keeps me pretty busy. Recently divorced. However, my ex-husband and I are awesome co-parents together. We make it work beautifully. And, you know, we're honestly really good friends. We live 7/10 of a mile from each other, and it works. So that's been a big transition lately as far as just how to navigate that whole world. And I feel like I could do a whole separate podcast on that, right?
You can be the host of that one.
Yeah, right. Professionally, I would say, you know, dating back to when I was a kid, I always had, you know, I was played sports and did a lot with my friends, but I always had like a little underlying anxiety myself, right? So thinking back, there was this stuff that I kind of suppressed anxiety-wise, and I learned really well how to internalize it and kind of hold it in. And that, I'm telling you, because it really set me on the direction for my career now, is, you know, helping kids with anxiety and dysregulation and understanding their emotions and how to regulate those, which I'm sure we'll dive more into that.
For sure.
But, and as you know, we went to a small school. We graduated with 103 in our class, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
It was somewhere between 100 and 120. I don't know the exact number, but.
Yeah. And we all had great teachers, I feel like. Very good teachers. But it was at the point when I was graduating, it's like, well, I knew I liked science and I knew I liked helping people. So it's like, well, maybe you should be a nurse. I'm like, okay, that sounds good. So I'll be a nurse. So I went to school for nursing for 1 year, realized that this is not my niche. Nothing against the nursing field. I think it's fantastic, but I'm not a very think inside the box person. I always want to think outside the box and do more. And nursing was very cookie cutter to me, especially in the first year. So I'm like, this is not my thing. It's like, well, I like working with kids. Maybe I'll work with kids. I'll be a teacher. And so I went to Edinburgh, which is not too far from me though, for teaching. And it was there that I learned I love working with kids, but I also learned that I don't want to work with the 30 kids in the class. I wanted to work with that one or two, you know, children who are exceptional in their own way. And maybe the kid that had some anxiety or struggling, or the exceptionally gifted child. And so it was then, my parents were really not happy about this at the time, because I was ready to graduate with my teaching degree. And I switched my major to a minor, which is elementary ed, and then my minor to a major, which was psychology. And it was then that I really set me on the path to the field of psychology, understanding all the things that go into treating someone with anxiety, depression, any mood dysregulation. And from there, I realized this is what I'm supposed to do. This was my niche and this was my path. And it also helped me gain a better understanding of myself, because it was then that I really realized any of the anxiety I felt as a kid, it was just learning how to turn any of those deficits into assets, right? And so that's really what I thrive on today in working with kids, is we all have deficits, but it's how do you turn those into an asset to make it better for yourself? How do you hone in your superpowers as you're going through life in the developmental years? And
absolutely love that, right? It's like making that. I said, I absolutely love that. It's like making lemonade out of the lemons. And I mean, the lemons is a negative connotation, but it's not, right? It's you're unique in your own way. Mm-hmm. And whether you're of some form of maybe autism, some look at that as a deficit, but others look at that as a gift. And okay. You're unique and you can think differently than I would say the mainstream way that most people think. And to me, those people are extremely special. Like we call them special needs, but I would say you have unique abilities instead of like deficits.
Exactly. And, you know, if you look through history too, and there's so many people with ADHD that are do really well, they just aren't sitting at a desk job, you know, 8 hours a day. They're doing other things because that's not how their body's programmed. And that's fine, but they do very well for themselves, or even like that anxiety, like being able to hone that into. You know, a lot of kids I see have, this is where I fell into, were super emotional. Like they took on a lot of those emotions, somewhat like an empath or just someone who understands and feels emotions greatly. But honing that in and learning how to understand someone's emotions and use it as a gift. You know, a lot of nurses, a lot of therapists kind of fall into that category because they understand the emotional aspect and understands how to use that as a driving force, not something negative.
Yeah, well, that's beautiful. And I definitely look forward. I've got some great questions for you. But before we do that, I'm going to have you kind of, as we talked about, do the three business questions and three personal. Then we're going to, I want to spend most of the time asking you questions because that's, guests and viewers get bored of hearing about me. It's about the guests and just the amazing things that people from the area and even more regionally are doing. So fire away.
So I thought really hard about these questions because I've seen your episodes and I was trying to find stuff that people have not asked you yet.
Okay. Right?
And this is episode 30 something.
30. I think this will be 34 when it airs. There's another one that, my good buddy Blake aired this past Wednesday, a couple days ago. Then, we've got another one airing in a couple weeks that I recorded several weeks back. So you'll be 34, I think.
Okay. Sounds good. So I did write these down just so I wouldn't forget them and I could ask them the way I wanted to.
Sure.
So the first one, professional, on an integrative perspective with whole health and hip and knee replacements, what is the biggest aspect looking at the whole person? So I know you've talked about this a little bit, but what's the whole aspect on looking at them physically, emotionally, mentally, their mental space as far as recovery and successful outcome?
That's a great question. And no, I've never been asked that. So you must have done your homework and watched a couple episodes. But so it kind of is very relevant to today because just I would say maybe 2 or 3 months ago, it's what I've always wanted to do, but it's like building something. It's like building a cake. You have to build it in layers. It doesn't all get built at once. So we're on the layer of kind of like looking at the whole aspect of the person. And we always kind of were superficially, but now it's a lot more objective. So I had this concept probably about 8 or 9 years ago where I wanted to create some type of survey, like a questionnaire that my patients would receive, fill out, and we would obtain data from the moment that they walked in the door as a new patient. It's called the MPAS score, M-P-A-S. It stands for Molly Pre-Arthroplasty Score. It doesn't have to be a before hip or knee replacement surgery. And that's just arthroplasty just means joint replacement, fancy term. But it is broken down into multiple different components. And the whole thing for me was I wanted to see a snapshot of my patients before I physically met them to understand who they were better. And if there was any areas of concern, right? So if I do your hip or your knee, are there any, I don't want to call them deficiencies, but are there any areas of that we can improve upon to help reduce risk of bad outcomes or complications after surgery? So the first one is really, really objective stuff. It's such like your height, your weight, your BMI, lab values, your hemoglobin. If you're a diabetic, what your hemoglobin A1C is, which is just a number that helps to determine how well you are controlling your diabetes over a long period of time. Not a snapshot of today, not your blood glucose today, but how well have you controlled it over 90 days, 3 months. You know, we look at other aspects in there as well, such as your nutrition, albumin and prealbumin are lab values that we look at. And I'm an orthopedic surgeon, obviously. So I'm very like mechanical, right? And I'm like green, yellow, red. Think about like a traffic light. And I created thresholds for each of these values within this first category, which is like the objective medical data. It's not how you feel. It's literally numbers. And if you exceed a certain BMI or if your hemoglobin is below a certain threshold, it's different for males and females, you would get assigned a color. I would know the number, but I would see a color so that I could briefly scan and see if it's all green. It's like Houston, we're go for launch. We're good. There's nothing really too concerning. But if I see a yellow, it's like, we need to modify this. If it's a red, it's a big risk factor. And sometimes some of those big risk factors, for instance, hemoglobin A1C, if it's above 7.0, we are not doing a hip or knee replacement. That's a hard, hard stop for me. BMI is a little bit more fluctuant. I don't have like a hard cutoff if your BMI is, you know, some insurance companies will not pay or approve a hip or knee replacement if it's above 40, which classifies as morbid obesity. Above 50 is super morbid obesity. I don't have that because certain people, they do everything they can in their power to lose weight. They're taking maybe some of the newer medications such as Ozempic or Mounjaro, and they get to a certain point, but they can't be physically active enough to lose anymore. So if they're, say, 42, 43, I'll make an exception as long as they don't have a lot of other risk factors, say, such as smoking. And so that's another thing that we look at. Then we have like a psychosocial section where we're looking at anxiety levels. And there is a previous kind of scoring system called the patient catastrophizing score. You may be familiar with that, but it is a number that it's really all focused on pain. What your perception of pain is related to why you're here, right? Your hip or your knee. And it asks, I don't know how many questions, but it's pretty lengthy, maybe 20, 22 questions. Your perception of the pain, how it affects you, and how often you think about this. And the higher the number, the more you tend to catastrophize this sounds bad, but like blow things out of proportion, you will do worse. That's just been proven in the data. Such things as anxiety, depression, whether you've been diagnosed with it is very different than if you're diagnosed untreated versus treated, right? If you're treated, you'll do better than the people that have anxiety and depression that's diagnosed but not treated. But you never will do as well as the people that never have been diagnosed and don't have anxiety or depression. It's just what the data shows. There's such things in there. People wonder why I ask like how many cats or dogs you have, but those are risk factors too for potential infection down the road. Like if you have a lot of indoor pets that could be rubbing up against your incision, maybe licking your incision. I know it sounds disgusting, but I've seen it all.
Just done that on LinkedIn about someone who got infected.
Yeah. So I've seen it all. It's just like one of those things when you do something long enough. Then there's other things in there, such as just kind of like your socioeconomic status too. Like, do you live alone? Do you have somebody that's going to be kind of your accountability coach? So all these layers build a score, but it's all these subcategories. So it is very impactful right now. We just started rolling this out, like I said, a couple months ago. So to me, it was always like just a brief snapshot. I don't have my final, like if you add everything up, what's a no-go for launch? I don't know if there ever will be, because certain factors weigh heavier than others, like the diabetes, for instance. And it's not like we say you're too obese or your diabetes is too out of control or you're a smoker. And that's another hard stop for me, is if you're an active smoker, or I guess nicotine user is the better term there, because there's smokeless tobacco too. So those are hard stops for me. But other than that, it's just like it's a tool that I can use to get a good snapshot of who this person is from a risk factor standpoint. And then myself and my team can hone in on that and help them, not just say, go lose weight, go get your diabetes under control, go do this, go do that. We created a wellness institute to not just identify or diagnose these issues, but to help intervene and offer solutions so that these people can get their hip or knee fixed, but at a optimized state in their health.
Yeah, I love that. I love how thorough it is. It's not just the what, right? It's the how.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have these things. Well, how do you actually put that into action to stop smoking, to lose weight? I'm curious though, the Ozempic, is that a short-term use? Because I know it's getting quite a lot of buzz.
It is. And I wish I had the answer for you. Like during our pre-op planning session this morning, we were talking about that. And my nurse practitioner who runs our wellness institute, we just asked the question like collectively at the table, we're like, what's going to happen in 10 years to these people that are on these medications, right? Because we don't have a lot of that long-term data yet. And I've seen people that have been on it, people that I know personally, and they come off of it and they rebound, right? It's like a lot of those things that if it seems almost too good to be true, and is it something that you can be on forever? I don't manage that. My nurse practitioners in the Wellness Institute manage that. I want to get more educated on that. I'm actually looking to obtain a functional medicine degree. I don't know if you caught Blake Miller's episode from this past Wednesday, but he's an orthopedic surgeon that he just looks at the world differently, and especially medicine. And he obtained a functional medicine degree about a year and a half ago or so. So I asked him about the program, and I'm going to look at a couple programs. Not that I have all this time on my hands to do this, but it's something that, Karen was like, when are you
planning to do that? Some, just read on the Zumpic about it, you know, changing the serotonin and dopamine with anxiety and depression too, longitudinally. And so I find that very intriguing.
In a good or bad way?
Can spike anxiety in a negative way, but nobody knows, you know, what that looks like. Everyone's different. So maybe okay. They had a precursor for anxiety anyway, and so maybe they didn't do as well, whereas another person might be fine, right?
Sure.
So it's looking at all those functional aspects, I guess.
Yeah. But. What else?
All right. Well, thank you for answering that.
Yeah.
Let's see. Second. Oh, so this is kind of a fun professional one. Do you ever see yourself actually retiring, or do you think you'll always dabble in some sort of entrepreneurial business aspect?
B. Yeah. I obviously am not going to be able to do like my day job, what I went to school forever for, which is being an orthopedic surgeon, doing high volume hip and knee replacements. It's exhausting. I love what I do. It's extremely physical. A lot of people don't realize that. I think people envision just like sitting there and, you know, taking your time and, but it's physically taxing. I'm tired and exhausted when I'm done with a day of surgery. I typically do 6, sometimes 7 joint replacements. I mean, it's mentally exhausting, but physically, you know, my neck hurts at the end of every day. I have chronic neck pain. You know, I'm standing on my feet. I don't sit down ever during surgery. Surprisingly, my back doesn't give me too many problems, but a lot of orthopedic surgeons, I'm sure it's going to come. It's more my neck, just because I wear a helmet during the operation and it has weight to it. It's like wearing a football helmet all day for 8 hours straight and bending down to look into a wound. So
yeah,
I've done a lot of things over the past couple of years to try to like improve ergonomics by like positioning the patients differently. Like when I do total knees, I use what's called a hanging leg holder, which I never saw anywhere else for a total knee. I saw it for partial knees. And I said, well, why can't I do that for total knees? Because my neck hurts less, my back hurts less when I do this, and was able to figure out a way to do that. But to answer your question, I don't see myself ever fully retiring. I love problem solving. I love consulting. I love just being active and contributing some way, whether it's healthcare or just entrepreneurial type projects. I think I'll probably do that up until the point that I become insane, demented, whatever it may be. But I'm a firm believer in like lifelong education and contribution to like society. And just like, it makes me feel good to be able to help other people. So if I stopped doing that and just started playing golf every day, there'd be a huge gap and just openness that, you know, would probably make me just sad and depressed if I did that. So I'll be always doing something.
Yeah. Okay. I can see that.
What else? You got one more business than the personal stuff.
I do. So last business, looking back when you decided to go out on your own and start Whole Health, what is the biggest piece of advice that you would give somebody else who is ready to take that plunge to either start a physician owned, practitioner owned, therapist owned, whatever their thing is? What was the biggest, I think, stepping stone?
I would say I would have some questions first. I would be like to, I'd want to know more about their personality. I'd want to know more about their career goals, a little bit more about their personal life to see if it would make sense to do that. And if all those questions pointed to yes, 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 like this is the right person to do this, because it's not right for everybody. There's a lot of people, and I'm just going to use medicine. I'm just going to use orthopedic surgery because that's what I know best. There's a lot of orthopedic surgeons that probably shouldn't start their own practice and be a business owner because, number one, it's maybe not their passion. Maybe two, it's not their strength. They're more of that person that wants to like go in, be a surgeon, and be done with it at 4 or 5 o'clock and shut it off until the next day. The business side of it is much more involved and also exhausting and taxing in and of itself, because we're never taught any of those things. But if I found that the person I thought was the right person to do it, the first thing I would tell them is just do it. I mean, the old Nike adage, literally, you're going to be scared. You're going to think you can't do it. You're probably going to suffer from a little self-inflicted imposter syndrome where you don't think you're good enough, you don't think you're smart enough, you don't think you're capable enough. And I would say you just need to like get the courage. And if you ever need a pep talk, just call me because I'm hugely, hugely supportive of private practice. I mean, I have a podcast that's dedicated just to that. But and then I would just say like find a core group of people, a team that you can build this with, right? When I first started it, I knew I needed people, but I didn't. I had a very small circle. My circle was one. It was me. And I did everything that I could. I did all the marketing myself. I did all this myself. I did this. I did all the hiring. I did all the firing. It was exhausting. Now it was my baby. So I think I kind of needed to do that for at least a period of time to really fully understand what it meant to be a business owner. Because again, we're not taught that in medical school. I never took any business classes whatsoever. So I wasn't great at it when I first started it, but I knew what I wanted. I had a vision of what I wanted the company to look like, how I wanted my employees to feel and function, and more importantly, how I wanted my patients or as their customers. I mean, they really are. How they perceive it and how they feel when they're there. But I learned early that I needed a team of people behind me to help me with that, right? You know, I was like, I'm going to do it all in-house. I'm going to do billing in-house. I'm going to do this. Don't feel like you have to do everything. Like, know what you do well, focus on that, and hire people that can help you in areas that you're not necessarily strong. Like, I have a fantastic business manager that he's not the greatest people person. Sean's going to be listening to this. He knows that. He can't stand dealing with people, but he's an accountant by trade, so he's very, very good with numbers, and he balances my books and does all that, right? He's the numbers guy. I have my Travis, my co-host for Red Carpet. He's my people person. Now, he's not formally like an employee of Whole Health, but he's a consultant, and I pay him to deal with the people, the staff. Then I have, you know, people to deal with the patients, and Allison Parplasha, she's my leadership coach for me personally, but she's also my leadership and life coach for the practice. And she helps with my leadership team that she actually started my leadership team a couple years ago. So I would just say, like, don't try to do it all on your own. Be very, very involved with everything from the get-go. Keep your finger on the pulse, but be willing to, you know, step aside to let people that are better at certain things kind of spread their wings.
And I like that. And I think as you get busier too, I think I'm finding that now is I'm ready to like hire people to do the stuff I don't like to do, like the finances and
yeah,
the number stuff and the taxing and all the things.
Yeah. I mean, cause if the business grows, it gets more complicated, right? I mean, I have 30 some employees, so figuring out, you know, their retirement plans and their 401k, all that stuff, their profit sharing. Like, I don't have time to do that. And my brain doesn't work like that. That's not my forte.
Yeah. And I think you had a good point too about the business aspect. And, you know, physicians aren't taught that in med school, right? Just like in psychology, I had never had a business class at all. And a lot of people go out and branch off and do their own thing, but nobody has any business sense. So
yeah,
you're also trying to learn all the businessy stuff and do a crash course yourself on whatever you can find. It's tricky.
I never thought I would like business. I mean, you know, Jared Oakes, he was a business major in college, and he used to come home and talk about, you know, writing business papers, and he'd throw out terms like assets and liabilities and things like that. And to me, that was Greek at the time. Cause I'm like, oh my God, Jared, this is so boring. I'm never going to need to know this. I'm going to need to know anatomy. I'm going to need to know physiology, maybe a little bit of chemistry and pharmacology, but I need to know, and some mechanics stuff, but like, I'm never going to need to know this stuff. And then all of a sudden I needed to know it. And I've actually really, really, really enjoyed it. Like, I like the business stuff almost as much as I like the technical medical stuff now, because it challenges me to a different level.
It is, and learning something new. And I started working with a financial advisor and learning how to invest and learning all those things that I didn't know in my 20s. And now in my 40s, I'm like, oh, And like, I feel like kids need to know that too.
Oh,
so there's a way to teach
for sure.
Kids and the younger generation.
Yeah.
So much more helpful.
Personal stuff?
Yes. So I have three personal.
And by the way, I have to do my disclaimer. I know you've listened to this before, but you get one veto. If there's a question that I ask you or you ask me that you can say, no, I don't want to, I don't feel comfortable. But I will also say that no one to date, episode 33 complete, your episode 34 has ever vetoed a question. So no pressure, Chandra.
No, just... I shouldn't be at first.
You can be, but yeah.
I want to keep the streak rolling.
Yeah.
All right. So the first one is, if you can think back to your 10-year-old self and what maybe your superpower was that you didn't hone in yet, that maybe made you good at some of the things you were good at, and you were able to hone that into the person you are today, what is that superpower that helps you do all the things that you do?
I hate talking about myself like this because it sounds like arrogant, but my superpower, and I love this question, I ask a lot of my guests this, is my creativity. You know, my 10-year-old self was the kid that would get a remote control car or radio control car. I'd tear it apart and figure out what else I could make. Jeff Schmidt, actually, who was one of our classmates through elementary, junior high, high school, I still see him periodically. He brought up just within the past year, he goes, do you remember in fifth grade for Mr. Curry's class, we were doing a World War II history lesson. You built a B-17 bomber out of, you know, and I was like, I remembered it. I remember exactly what I used. I was like, yeah, I used a big tube. I used my mom, like the old pantyhose containers, how it had like a clear egg shell on the end. That was the nose of the plane. And I built wings and I took four engines that I had taken out of like radio or remote control cars, hooked them up to batteries. That manned the four propellers that would go around, built a cockpit, all of this stuff, painted all green and hung it. I mean, I obviously couldn't fly, but it was badass. And to this day, he remembered that. And so that was me as a kid. I was always like, I loved projects, right? Like I remember Mr. Drake, for one of his classes, I don't know if it was zoology or whatever it was probably a biology. It was like a French Creek project. And I built like a flowing river with like a timeline of like, you know, American history along French Creek. And it actually had flowing water and buildings and things that were moving. And so I was always very, very creative. My current very, very good friend, he's one of my best friends, Travis. He said to me the other day, he goes, Ryan, I've never met somebody that thinks like you. He's like, you're always thinking. And he's like, your creativity is like off the charts. I don't know if this was a compliment or not. It was probably like a little bit of a compliment and a little bit of a like a jab. He goes, if someone had to ask me like, to describe you, he goes, it would be a 14-year-old that has like a reasonable amount of money to like do what a 14-year-old would want to do. Like, you know, build something that no one else would think of, like a hidden door to come into a room or something like that kind of stuff. So definitely my creativity and it continues. And I use that to build my practice and to build a non, kind of typical medical practice, and I mean, not just the building, but like the basis of the practice. It's not like any other practice I've ever seen in terms of like the holistic aspect and the unreasonable hospitality aspect, which is like our new kind of thing that we're really trying to push.
Which makes it more special and unique, right? Because it has that creative aspect.
Yeah, for sure.
And actually, you know, I remember that bomber. I think, didn't Mr. Curry have it hanging up on display? I feel like it was hanging from
the display for a while. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
I think he showed every class. And Mr. Drake, he was one of my favorites.
He's awesome.
I think he's still there, isn't he? I think he just got the Teacher of the Year award.
He should get like the Teacher of the United States award. I mean, he's an amazing, amazing guy. And
so patient.
It made it fun to learn, right? Like a lot of classes, you're going like, oh God, I got to do this. But like, he was engaged. He loved what he did or does. And just, he made it fun.
He did. Yeah. I remember having zoology, biology, and anatomy with him and doing all the dissecting. Like, he actually made it fun.
Yeah.
It was good stuff.
What else? Do you have one more personal? Or is that the first one?
That was the first one. I don't know which one I'm going to go with next. I'll go with this one. So I'm going to preface this and say that there was a slogan in the early 1900s that said, behind every great man is a great woman. And so that has gotten a lot of, you know, people said it over and over again, obviously for the last 100 and some years. And I'm not talking about your mom and your sisters, because they're exceptional in their own way. So can you shed some light on Karen? And
for sure.
Just what's the glue that holds it together? Because obviously you're very busy, you do all the things, right? So can you share with your viewers one or two things that really help do it all, right? What's that driving force?
Yeah, so I definitely have talked about like the uniqueness of my wife and our relationship in previous episodes. And I think I've used, it's not really an analogy, but I've said that, like, if you gave me 100 women to like speed date, and try to find a compatible mate, maybe, and I got through them all and spent maybe not even speed date, like actual take time to go on dates. That would be exhausting, 100, but maybe one out of the 100 would probably be compatible with me just because of who I am. I don't think I'm an easy person to be a mate with, or a partner with. So, and I was very, very lucky to find Karen. Now, if you looked at Karen and you put Karen in the same situation and you gave her 100 people to figure out who she would be compatible with, like probably 80 to 90% of them. I mean, she's just awesome in so many different ways. And I'm not saying that I don't have gifts, but I just feel like I'm unique and challenging, right? Like, because my professional life, whether you want to think it's good or bad, defines a lot and it takes a lot of my time and my energy. So to find somebody that understands that, like, I was put on this earth, you know, first and foremost, to be a really good human being, to be an amazing, whatever the main things are. For me, it's being an amazing husband, amazing father. Family means the most to me. But professionally, that is right there. That's the next thing that's on my, like, ladder rung of reasons I'm here on planet Earth. And a lot of people, their job is just to collect a paycheck to feed their family. I don't want to make it sound like my profession is more important than my family, but it occupies a tremendous amount of my time and my energy. So my battery oftentimes is depleted when I come home, and she understands that. And she has the ability to kind of like keep the house, get the boys to and from school and events. And I do everything I can. I mean, I coach a lot of my boys in activities. But she also has this unique ability to ground me and humble me and allow me to like see things from others' perspectives. Because prior, and this I think is very common amongst physicians and probably even more common amongst surgeons, is our training is very, very militant. And it's like going to basic training, right? You're doing your residency, your fellowship, and it's just exhausting. And you get so focused on this goal of training academically, your skill set with your hands, that we are generally very emotionally immature when we come out. And we're very selfish individuals, just because of, I think maybe we have a little bit of a chip on our shoulder because we gave up so much during our training. It was all about others, others, others. We had delayed gratification, right? I didn't have my first real job and I didn't take any time off until I was 32. So you come out and you're just like, now it's time for me. It's time for me. It's time for me. And so she humbles me and to let me know that it's not just time for me, it's time for us, we, the boys, and my extended family and friends and my patients. But she also, like, I'll be like, oh, this person did this. I take a lot of things personally, and she'll have the ability to allow me to look at it through a different lens that I generally wouldn't have had the capacity to look at through prior to meeting her. And to this day, she gets that from her mother, who, by the way, they'll be here soon. I'm super excited to see Jim and Mary, and Mary is one of my faithful, viewers too. So, but Mary, my mother-in-law, always had the ability to, like, be the devil's advocate, and Karen got that from her for sure. Like, I'll say something and it's really affecting me about a person or a patient or an employee, and I'm just like so passionate about everything I do, and I'm just like, God, this is bothering me, and she's like, well, what if, have you thought about it this way? And I'm like, I don't want to think about it that way. Like, I want to think about it the way I think about it. And she has a way of bringing me to the point that I, at the end, I'm like, you're right. Not that I'm wrong, but you're right that I need to look at it that way. And she's softened me a lot, and she has really gotten me to just think before I act, right? Like, I'm probably a very impulsive person, like, from just nature, and just, I think surgeons are generally. And, you know, you have a heated email that you just have to send, and you have to send it right now. And I've done that. I've done that plenty of times throughout my career. And not that I ever regretted the message that I sent, but it was how I delivered the message. And I could have softened it a bit. And now if there's one of those emails that I need to send out, you know darn well who's proofreading it before it gets sent out. Because she does it. And she's actually ghost written a couple for me. And the response was, wow, this is such an eloquent response. And I'm just like, God, I don't have an eloquent bone in my body for this kind of stuff. So,
and I love that. And I love that you said grounds you. So finding that balance, right? And
yeah,
kind of help bring you down a little bit. That's awesome.
Yep. So. What left?
You have the ghostwriter when you're, you know, kind of in your head a little bit.
Oh, I'm in my head a lot. So she helps me with that.
That's good stuff. You ready for number three?
Sure.
All right. So you have three boys, as many of the viewers know. If you were to write each of them a letter, I'm digging a little deep here, and wow, tell them something as far as advice or something you want them to know that they open when they are 18, what would that collective piece of advice be?
So, is the letter different for all three? Like, is one letter specifically for Anthony and, like, who he is and Tino and Luca? Do you want me to answer three things?
Is that okay?
Sure. Okay. Yeah,
one question, or is that three questions?
No, I mean, there's rules, but there's not rules. So you can do whatever you want. And I'm going to ask you more than six questions too. So,
fair enough.
And I'll try to keep it brief. But so Anthony, I would say, you know, and this isn't a dig, because we all have our, as we talked about earlier, strengths, weaknesses, and unique abilities or gifts. I would say he's probably a lot like me in certain ways, where he's very impulsive and he can be very emotional, more than me, but with certain things. So I would say it was part of a quote I put today on LinkedIn. And although John Wooden was who I referenced, the first time I heard it was actually Justin Verlander, who still is pitching in the major leagues. But at the time that I heard it, he was pitching for the Detroit Tigers. And the way that John Wooden wrote it was, life is full of peaks and valleys. Don't let the peaks get too high. Don't let the valleys get too low. The way that Justin Verlander wrote it is, life is full of highs and lows. Don't let the highs get too high and don't let the lows get too low. Like, if you had a perfect game that you pitched, celebrate it, be happy with it, take pride in that, but don't let it take your ego over the moon. And if you have a really bad game, or you struggle with, you had a bad grade on a test, or you know, something bad, like, things come in waves. Like, I mean, that's the analogy, right? The peaks and the valleys are waves. don't think that life's over when you're in the trough of the wave or the valley. And don't think that life is just going to continue to get better and better. Like, steady Eddie, right? And just try to approach life with a calm, composed mind and heart, and know that you're loved by your mom, your dad, and your friends and your family, and just try to keep even, right? And yeah, you can get excited, but just don't beat yourself up too much when things don't go your way. For Santino, you know, I mean, a lot of these things are probably the same for all three, but like that, I think is like very unique for Anthony, because that's like something that I think he would really benefit from, that message. Tino. So Santino is a very emotional person as well. He's a very sensitive person. He thinks, like everyone's out to get him, and you know, it's a personal attack. And again, I see so much of myself in each of them with different things. So, you know, I would just say, like, athletically, he probably is like our most natural athlete and can just pick up any sport activity and be pretty good at it with never trying it. I'm not saying the best, but like probably top 80%, but just starting it. But he's the one that has like he puts the least amount of effort into it. So it's just like, oh man. Like, so I would say to him, you know, hone your emotions, just kind of like Anthony, but find your thing, right? You are really, really good and talented at almost anything you've ever tried, but and don't beat yourself up if you don't know what it is right now at 18. You may not know what it is when you're 25, but search your soul, search your heart for what it is that you want to devote your life to, and professionally and personally. And when you do find that, you need to step it up and you need to put your heart, your soul, everything you have into that. Don't leave anything out. I've put everything I have into my career with Whole Health, with the way that I deliver care to my patients. Some patients may not agree with that. They may not see that, but I do. That's the reality. My family knows that. My wife knows that. My kids know that. So that's what my message would be to Tino, because I feel like he has so much potential. But right now he's just like, it's just coasting, kind of an autopilot, because he's kind of like me too, where like my sisters had to work really, really hard in school and they studied and they had homework all the time. And that's Anthony. He is very diligent. He's working all the time on homework. Tino never has homework. I never had homework. Homeroom was when I did homework. And I was lucky enough to be able to do that. I mean, obviously as time went and you go to college, it's a little bit more difficult. You go to med school, it's a lot more difficult. Then you go to residency, it's even more difficult. So find what you have and become passionate about it. For Luca, our youngest, has swag, unbelievable swag. Like, he's just funny, the things he says. And I think all three are going to be very, very successful at whatever they choose to do. And I wish, I don't want to like let time pass me by. I want to enjoy every moment, but like, it would just be very curious to just be able to have a glimpse into the future to see like, what is Anthony going to do and be someday? What is Tino going to do and be? And Luca, what is he going to do and be someday? But Luca, he, and they all have their little tempers too, but I would say like his weak point is like, he is a lot like me in terms of wanting to be a perfectionist. And if he ever fails, it is, he loses it. And I would say, again, kind of the same message as Anthony, kind of like composure is key. And just don't take yourself so seriously. Like, and I've had to learn this. And Karen's taught me this. You asked your last question. What have I learned from Karen, or how does she help me? Is like, be able to laugh at yourself, be able to make fun of yourself a little bit, and don't take yourself too seriously. And I would say the same thing to Luca. Like, he's an unbelievable dude that's got tremendous swag. He's going to have ladies all over him someday. He's going to have a very successful sports career too. Like, he's our baseball player for sure. And, but it, the temper has got to go. And I think the way to do that is just not by taking yourself so seriously. Like, it's okay to drop a ball. It's okay to miss a question on a test. It's okay. Like, you're not supposed to be perfect. You're a work in progress. Failure was always, and still to this day, is my biggest fear. Disappointing others is part of that for me. And I think that that has been like my weak point. I'm, I guess, old enough, wise enough to be able to like admit that now. And I would just say, like, if I could help him earlier than waiting until he's 40 to realize you don't have to be perfect. Do the best you can and have a good attitude, and the rest will take care of itself.
Yeah, I love that. That's great advice. And I think you can apply it any age, right? Not to take yourself too seriously, you know.
Yeah.
Ride with whatever happens in your life and let it go.
Great questions, Chandra. Honestly, I think they were probably some of the best, if not the best, most thought out questions that I've ever had. And they were all unique. I don't think anyone's ever asked me those specific questions. So awesome job.
My goal was met. That's exactly what I wanted to do.
You get an A.
Something.
Yeah, I don't give A pluses. I don't give A pluses to myself, to anyone. So everyone always asked me, like, I told a lady the other day, like, you got like one of the best knees I've ever done. And if I had to give myself a grade 0 to 10, you got like a 9, 9.5. And she's like, not a 10? I was like, I'll never give myself a 10. Like, that is like the golden goose type of thing. I'll never get that. I'm striving for that my entire career. I'll never give myself that, but you got an A. So,
all right. Thank you.
Strong work. So you ready to turn the tables?
I am ready. Shoot.
And before I do that, I'm drinking a Barolo. What did you say you were drinking?
I am drinking a Basil Hayden and ginger ale with 2 cherries.
Basil Hayden. Your son's name is Hayden.
It is. So Basil Hayden's my favorite whiskey. And anytime I order a whiskey out, he's like, don't drink me. I'm like, I'm not going to drink you.
Nice. So.
But yes. It's nice and refreshing. It's a good Friday drink after all the things this week.
Nice. So are you ready for the tables to be turned here?
I'm ready.
All right. So professionally, I'm going to start kind of like chronologically. You kind of went through a little bit of your like background. Like, you first thought you wanted to be a nurse, then you thought you wanted to be a teacher, and then you kind of like life gave you windy turns and you started to realize that you wanted to work more in a one-on-one or very small group, kind of your niche, as you kind of explained it. And that psychological component of things. Was there a person that kind of like that key influencer, mentor in your life that helped you kind of like see this? And was there like, it's a two-part question. Was there a person or a couple people maybe? And was there a moment, like, was there a, like an aha moment, like a light went off when you were like, I don't want to be a nurse. I know I don't want to be a nurse. I know I don't want to be a teacher of 30 kids in a classroom. This is what I want to do. Was there one of those for each of those?
There were several. But the one for nursing was, I'll never forget. I went to Teal College in Greenville for nursing school, and I was going to do my, you know, initial nursing there and then transfer somewhere else. That was the plan. But I remember sitting in one of the intro nursing classes and just going through the parameters of, you know, if a patient comes in and they have X, you treat them with Y, or if they have this, you treat them with that. And I was like, I just wanted something more. I'm like, there can't be like an A, you treat them with B. Like, there has to be some other niche here, right? And I was always into the whole aspect of physical health and just knowing about the body. But I was like, I don't think nursing's for me. So I'll never forget like that moment. I was like, I think I'm going to switch. And I had no idea what that was. But I talked to my parents about it, and they're like, well, you like kids? I'm like, I do. And like, well, Edinburgh University has a great education program. Like, they do. So I'm like, okay, I'll switch. So I transferred there after freshman year and loved it. loved working with kids, loved all of the lesson planning that went into it. I really found that I loved the early education classes and the early intervention classes on just understanding child development and child behavior. And so that was kind of like the first main catalyst that started getting me to think about children and why they do the things they do, how they're raised, like what's going on in the brain, right, when they're developing. And then I'll never forget, I was doing my student teaching and ready to graduate. I mean, I had, you know, a semester or two left of undergrad for LEd. And it was about the time that No Child Left Behind came into effect. And I was like, there's just something I just didn't love about it, right? And when I was working with these kids, I wanted to work with that. And I remember in the classroom, there was this one girl that was having some emotional regulation issues. And I was like, I feel like she needed something more. And like, I want to work with that kid. Like, I don't want to work with the 20, 30 kids in the class as a whole. I want to figure out what's making that one person tick and how they can be, you know, do better or reach their goals, whatever they might be, and turn any of those, as I mentioned earlier, any of those deficits into assets. And so that was really the turning point. I remember going to my advisor and saying, how can I do this? And like, well, you're going to lose a lot of credits and you're going to go to school probably for 2 more years. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. It was more money, but it just felt like that was what I was supposed to do. And I can't explain it fully. It was almost like an intuitive feeling that this is what I'm supposed to do. So that's what I did.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love the fact you followed your heart, because a lot of people, you know, whether it's your teacher or your parents or somebody kind of trying to give you the reality check of like, hey, this is going to be more time, this is going to be more money. Like, at the end of the day, yes, we can't get time back, but the rest of your life, the rest of your career is a lot longer than 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. And money, who cares about money, right? Like, I don't. I mean, you need money to survive, but like at the end of the day, you are going to make that back, pay that off, and there's no price tag on personal fulfillment and job satisfaction. And like, I don't look at my job as a job. I look at my job as like part of who I am, right? I'm not dreading going to work on a Monday morning, Sunday night. I'm looking Sunday night to get, I'm excited about Monday and going in and helping people. So, and I feel like you're the same kind of person like that. You're extremely passionate about what you do.
Yeah, and that's a great takeaway. I mean, I was in my 20s, and yes, I was looking at the dollar signs, looking at the time wasted, looking at my friends who are already graduating with undergrad and going on to graduate school, and I'm like, oh, I should be doing like all the shoulda, woulda, couldas, right? But in the end of the day, in the whole scheme of a lifetime, there's no regrets, right?
Love it. So, second business question: you have your own business, right? Mindful Adaptations. I follow you on LinkedIn. Can you just briefly, this is again a little bit of a two-parter, so when you kind of host the podcast, you can make all the rules in the world. So 6 questions just went out the window. But can you explain to our viewers what Mindful Adaptations is, kind of what your vision was for that, is for that? And, you know, I'm going to leave that next question because I think it's tied to this, but it's a little deeper. And so what is Mindful Adaptations? Where do you kind of get the idea for it, the basics of it, and where do you see it going in the future? That's question number 2.
Okay. So Mindful Adaptations, I was just to preface and say, I took 9 years off from my career to stay home with the kids, with a therapist previously. And in that 9 years, loved being home with the kids, but I always knew that wasn't the end, right? There was something else I was going to do. Just didn't know what that was. So in 2020, about right before COVID hit, is when I got my business license. And I had this idea to brand myself more as a coach than a therapist so I could cross state lines and do Zooms. And it really initially started because I saw a lot of my colleagues or past colleagues and friends that they had wait lists for kids to be seen that had anxiety or depression or, you know, whatever's going on. So I was like, if I start this coaching business, I can see them in interim until they can be seen, you know, and properly assessed and diagnosed and seen by a psychologist or a psychiatrist if need be. But then one thing kind of trickled into the next, where, you know, I started seeing clients on Zooms across state lines. And then once things loosened up with COVID, I started renting a space and seeing people in office. And as things evolved, yes, it started with just seeing kids with anxiety-related symptoms and emotional regulation. And as that's continued to evolve, now I'm seeing kids more with an integrative wellness aspect. So yes, I might see some kids that have anxiety-related symptoms or ADHD-related symptoms. I'm not so concerned about the diagnosis as the symptoms that they're coming to me for, and looking at the integrative aspect. So yes, the mental, emotional, but also what's going on environmentally, what's going on with internally with their vagus nerve and how it's responding. And I collaborate with a chiropractor who does vagus nerve stimulation, which him and I have a lot of patients that will cross back and forth, because he does the vagus nerve stimulation stuff for the sensory related things, for some of the nervous system stuff to help quiet down the nervous system, so that I can help with some of the emotion regulation stuff. So it is really kind of a two-parter. And then I also have a nutritionist that I work with as well that helps with some of the dietary stuff, helps with the supplementation and seeing if they're low on something or if they might need something more into their diet and some of that aspect.
So where do you see it going in the future? I mean, because that's kind of like through now, like, I guess the last part of that question is like, where's mindful adaptations? And I mean, you don't need to let all the cats out of the bag, but like, do you have any future goals that you see?
I do. So I don't know how to answer this without letting some cats out of the bag.
Give a preview.
What I do see is having my own teaching institute to do some of the stuff that I'm doing now, but also to teach others.
When you say teaching, you mean other coaches?
Other coaches.
Okay.
And so it's really getting more into the whole body integrative space and getting more into what's going on with the vagus nerve, what's going on with the heart, what's going on with the gut, and how that's all connected to the brain and how those things are all firing and communicated together. And how to holistically help somebody through those things without having to use medication, without SSRIs or any of the psychotropics. And currently I'm getting my doctorate in natural integrated medicine to be able to do some of those things and look into the legality of how to start my own institute, like how that all works, really.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I mean, I know Karen's mom, Mary, will watch this for sure. Karen generally tunes in to, I would say, at least 50% of the podcast. It's just like whatever's going on in life. But her and I were talking about you, you know, I think last week or so. And just like, she's like, yeah, I remember when you were working with Anthony a couple of years ago. And all the stuff that you're saying is like stuff that she kind of brings up from time to time, like the heart, the gut, the, and how she's very, very focused on like the gut and the nutritional piece of it. And I think there's absolutely something to it. It's not what I do on a daily basis, so I don't fully understand it, but I'm definitely aware of it and I believe it too. So love what you're doing.
I'm going to be a little nerdy for a second, because this is, I think it's such awesome.
You can be nerdy.
Cutting-edge research. But, you know, what they're finding, or they have found out, is the heart sends more signals to the brain than the brain sends to the heart, right? And the gut sends more signals to the heart than the heart sends to the gut. And so if you think about it in the reverse, it's, you know, it's more like the gut, heart, brain, rather than brain, heart, gut. And so what's going on in the gut area and the heart emotionally is so impactful for what's going on in the brain. And so like that, just that super highway pathway and that communication is such a big, big deal when you're talking about anxiety or depression or just, you know, whole body health in general, really.
It's a beautiful segue into my third question. So okay, you and I have had some conversations about like energy, and you're very energetically in tune, I think. Can you go into a little bit of depth for, you know, our viewers out there to better understand like You know, when I went to Sedona, I kind of shared with our guests like the...
Sorry, 1 second.
No worries. When Karen and I, we've gone to Sedona several times, and like the energy, the vortices, the things like that, like that is like a lot of people would look at this as like, all right, here we go. We're getting a little quacky and this and that, but like you're very much in tune with like energy, right? And like the earth's energy, people's energy. Can you go into that a little bit, like to help our viewers better understand like, and me too, because you know a lot more about this than me, but like I believe it's there without question, because I've been there. I felt different when I was there at the vortices and things like that. And you can kind of, you can walk into a room and you can feel, I mean, we talk about this, like the elephant in the room, so to speak, like there's energy and certain people connect, certain people maybe don't connect as well. Like what's going on there? I know this is a deep question, but
it is, and I feel like I could do 3 podcasts on this subject alone. But I'm going to answer the first part of this question in a science way. So our heart sends off more electromagnetic waves than any other part of our body in our organ. And those waves are sent out externally through I don't know what the radius is, but it's a pretty big radius, right? And our emotions are coming from our heart. So we have the emotional energy that are being sent out, which is why you can feel someone's energy. You can feel if, you know, someone walks in the room, it's like, ew. Or if it's more positive, like people can sometimes feel that. And with that being said, you know, we also have certain thoughts that we think, right? And that's energy. You can't see it, but you can feel it. And just like how when you think a negative thought, it can, you know, offset your day a little bit, and thinking more positive thoughts can better enhance your day. And so when you think of the energy aspects, not only are we feeling that ourselves from what we think and what we feel and how we choose to show up on our day, but you can also feel that from somebody else, right? If someone's, you know, thinking really bad thoughts about you, you can feel it. You may not know what you're feeling, but you feel something. And I always use the example as, you know, energy vampires. Like you can feel when someone's sucking your energy, and you can feel when they're replenishing your energy. And to know that difference is to really be in tune with how your body feels. And to dig a little deeper, if they've proven that looking at our cells in our microscopes, they vibrate, right? Every one of our cells vibrates at a different speed. And those vibrations can help us, or they can deplete us. So not to go too deep here, but they've actually done studies on the highest vibrational frequencies for emotions, and the highest frequency, do you know what it is?
Anxiety?
No.
Is it a positive thing?
It's a positive one.
I mean, I don't think I want to say this on the podcast.
Maybe not what you're thinking, but it's authenticity.
Oh.
Authenticity. And the second highest, I believe, is love. So the reverse of that, though, is fear, guilt, shame, resentment. So the higher your frequency is, the higher vibrational energy, the better you feel. The lower, the worse you feel. And so I always explain as a kid, the kids I work with, it's kind of like a funnel. And if you start feeling really, really bad, you're going to funnel down into feeling depressed, into feeling really anxious. If you turn that around and go up higher and raise your vibrations, you're going to feel awesome. Like you're going to feel, you know, more in tune with yourself. You're going to feel more authentic with yourself. And so it's really helping with that energy. So when you use the example of Sedona, Sedona's the same way. Like there's energy vortices that are basically, you know, because of the stones of the in Sedona and the way that they are charged or whatever from the sun. Like, I don't know in depth, like how that all works, but you can feel it, right?
For sure.
And you can definitely get a sense for it. So in terms of the emotional aspects, it's how you choose to feel, how you channel those positive thoughts and what energy you put out into the world.
That's a beautiful description. I mean, from my Sedona experience, I've used these terms before and I've never thought about it like that, but like I was always like, this is my happy place. Like, I feel like I can go there, unplug, and it recharges my batteries that are depleted. And so there's probably some like actual scientific evidence behind that showing that when I'm there, there is some physical change that's occurring from energy, the vortices, my vibrational frequencies, where I'm leaving there vibrating at a much higher frequency, I guess, than when I arrived.
There's books on that very subject. I think it is energetically aligned. And I know exactly what you're talking about, having been there as well. And I have a picture of my daughter, actually. She was 12 at the time. And we had just hiked, and she was just taking a moment. And you could just, like, feel that she was just, like, kind of honed in and just calm.
Yeah.
Just there, just present. And, you know, I felt the same thing. And, you know, I know my son felt the same thing. It's a pretty powerful place.
Anthony definitely mentioned that to me. We went to one of the vortices by the airport there in Sedona. And he was just like, I feel different here. And he's just like, it just feels good. And I was just like, amen, brother. That's why we've been there 3 years in a row for Easter. And we're going to continue doing that until we're not able to do that.
Yeah. And I think that's awesome stuff. And I think people can always feel it, but they might not always know what they feel. And kids are really good at feeling it before they get super cognitive, right? Before the age of like 9. They're more in tune with their emotions. And where some kids can seem like they have big erratic emotions, it might be because they feel them greatly. They just don't know how to understand them. And it comes off a lot nearer kids as, you know, opposition or anxiety or conduct disorder because they don't know how to handle those emotions.
Sure.
So it makes them a little angry, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. So, I think that's my third business question, correct? Or like my sixth business question?
I think that was actually the sixth one. But
okay, so personal stuff. So you kind of asked me one of my favorite questions, which was along the lines of kind of like superpower. What is the Chandra superpower that you have had your entire life, obviously? Like where do you think you got it? Was it from mom? Was it from dad? Was it a combination? Was it from one of your grandparents? Like, and how does that affect you as a mom and as a professional?
It's a good question. I think, as I mentioned earlier, is the empathic one. Being extremely empathic to other people's emotions growing up. And I didn't understand it as a kid. And it's kind of interesting because a lot of the kids, especially the teenage girls, the young females, college age students, they start working with, or that just happen to find me and I start working, that come to me, fall on those lines. And so I feel like I can relate to that pretty well. And I didn't understand it, but I learned how to help it serve me and hone that in when I started working as a therapist many years ago. Because it's that intuition piece. It's that ability to hear what's not being said, but you can feel what's going on in the room and you can get a sense from the person through their nonverbals. And I think that is probably my biggest gift and my biggest asset that I used to think was a deficit, which is mainly why I do what I do. And where did I get that? You know, my mom and I are talking about that, and I think she falls along those lines a little bit too, and maybe didn't hone it in quite as young. And we actually just recently had a conversation about this, and I think my grandma had, my dad's mom had some of those capabilities as well, and just super empathic, but never really understood it. And, you know, I think to the day she died, she still had a little bit of anxiety and still really never kind of honed into who she was.
So
I want to look at those things.
You asked me about my 10-year-old self, and I'm just like thinking back to my 10-year-old self and your 10-year-old self. Like my view of Chandra Taramino at that point was you were extremely quiet. You were almost like shy, very reserved. You seemed like your confidence level was low in the fact that, like, I don't know, you were just very, very soft spoken. And I'm not trying to overanalyze who you were. What, and you've kind of explained it by some of the things that you just mentioned, but if you look at who you were then and who you've become, and what allowed you to kind of like change from, you've explained it more as like an anxiety, right? I've looked at it more as like a shy. And anytime that someone's shy, you don't just assume that maybe they're just not as confident with themselves. At least that's my interpretation. Whereas like you have those people that are just like super outgoing, talk, they never shut up, right? And you're just like, oh my God, like what's going on with this person, like deep down inside? And then I'm just curious about like your interpretation of like who I was when I was 10, and like knowing who I am now, you've at least seen me professionally and a bit personally, and knowing who you are now professionally, personally, way better than you know me. How has that changed from your 10-year-old self, my 10-year-old self, to current day?
How did that change? So there's a lot to that question.
Yeah, it is. It's a Chandra Taramina question. It's a deep question. There's a lot to it. I don't think I asked it well, but
how much time do we have?
Yeah.
So you're right. I was, and it's interesting how you can see the observations, right? You can see the behaviors that people see. And so what was seen was that I was shy, not as confident, which was true, right? But I had this internal anxiety. So I just had a lot going on in my head. And I think I was very much stuck in my head a lot of the time. I thought it better to not say anything than to say what I was really thinking, because I didn't know how it would be viewed, right? Or come across. So I think just over the years, the biggest thing was understanding my own feelings, understanding, you know, any of the anxiety I felt, any of the insecurities I felt were all really derived on fears. And so through the course of my life, when I started shedding all those fears, you know, fear of rejection, fear of abandonment, fear of saying something stupid, or, you know, whatever it was, I think as those fears got shed, I became more into myself. And that's actually something that I've continued on, is understanding when I have any fears and to let those go.
Yeah.
And we all have them, right? And for kids too, it's not letting them pile on where they start to have negative effects emotionally and start to lower your vibrations. Because looking back, I was probably operating very low vibrationally, yeah, my 10-year-old self. And I think over the course of my lifetime, I learned how to raise those vibrations naturally and to keep them up. And one of those is just being more in tune to my feelings and being okay with them, really.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And I mean, I look at who you are today and just like your energy, right? I'm gonna steal some of your kind of terminology for this. Like, you're still the same person, right? But like, you have accomplished so much, and like you exude confidence now, but not in an arrogant way at all. Like, you are, as you said, the highest frequency is authentic. Like, I truly, truly feel and see like authenticity when I see you, and your passion for what you do, how you say things is just like very, very much in line. It's just like, it's, you're very true to yourself and to others. You're not putting on a front. So
thank you.
Yeah, that's an awesome, awesome thing. And probably one of the highest compliments I think you can pay to somebody. But my last question, I want to make it kind of fun. So I know that you, just like myself, I like to do really fun things with our boys. Mm-hmm. What do you guys have planned for this summer, right? With your daughter and with your son, like any special one-on-one dates, any special family vacations, anything cool coming up? I know you said bucket list. So what's on the bucket list for you and the kids?
Quite a big bucket list. But I will say, over spring break, my kids and I, with some other friends and their kids, went to Siesta Keys for spring break. So that was our big vacation. And then all of us, My former husband included went to Disney in May also, which was fantastic.
I saw some photos on LinkedIn. That looked awesome.
They had a great time. So this summer, my daughter and I actually just did a couple of days at Conneaut Lake, just her and I. And my son and former husband were on a camping trip. So we've tried, and I know you guys do the same thing. Every year we alternate. So my daughter and I will have our mother-daughter trips and times. And sometimes we'll go somewhere further. We went to Austin, Texas once and had a mother-daughter trip. And we'll switch off with my son as well. So we can have that one-on-one time. And really the rest of the summer is just, they have so many things going on camp-wise, and my daughter plays volleyball, so that's a whole thing right now with getting ready for tryouts, and she's doing lessons. And that's really like one of her passions. And my son does go-kart racing, and so that eats up a lot of summer too, because the meets are usually every weekend. So aside from that, we're just gonna do little trips to Conneaut Lake here or there, swim. Summer is so short, we're just gonna enjoy it.
Soak it up, right?
Yeah.
And speaking of volleyball, did you hear that Nick Bancroft is tanking Meadville to the finals yet again?
No way. I did not hear that.
Yeah. And don't quote me on this. I think Jake Snyder, he's a Maplewood boy. He's my ORPA that works with me. He's much, much younger than us, Chandra. He's, I think he's like 30 or 31, something like that. But he and Nick were a couple years apart. And obviously Sheila is an amazing, amazing, legendary volleyball coach, both men and women, multiple state championships. Well, that apple did not fall far from the tree. And Jake said something along the lines of his 5 years of coaching at Meadville, four of the five, he's been in the state championship game. I think the only one that he wasn't was 2020 because of COVID. They didn't have it. And that was one of his best teams that he ever had. So they probably would have been in it. But
good for him. I remember Nick running around on the court when we were.
Oh, yeah. He had those like bangs that would flop around. And
oh, my gosh, right? He was like maybe five.
The Energizer Bunny.
Oh, good for him. That's awesome. And I think isn't Sheila still coaching?
She is. I mean, they were in the state championship for girls again this past fall. So it's just like.
Yeah, I was looking at the TV one day and I caught it on the network. I'm like, oh my God, that's Maplewood.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about, like, people ask me all the time because obviously our three boys play baseball. I didn't play baseball growing up. I mean, when I was very, very young, but when I realized that the kids were going to start pitching, I was like, no, I'm done. I'm done with this sport. I'm not getting hit by a baseball. And by the way, Anthony got hit twice this past week, once in the face.
Ouch.
A week ago, Saturday. Karen got video of it. It was horrific. And then just, couple days ago, he got hit by a pitch in the thigh. He's got a huge bruise. And I was like, that's why I didn't want to tell him that's why I stopped playing baseball. But people always ask, like,
I remember getting slammed in the finger. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You get hit with one of those pitches. Oh, that hurts.
Yeah. But people will ask me, they're like, men's volleyball. Like, we didn't have that sport. I said, at Maplewood, you actually, for men's, like, you played baseball if you couldn't make the volleyball team because they're both spring sports. But so Maplewood, I mean, I'm always pretty intentional with stuff, right? So I had to wear the Jordan 1 Lowe's. These are the taxis, black and gold, Maplewood colors. But you're a Pittsburgh girl now too, so I had to wear my Ben Roethlisberger jersey to kind of support you and where you live and what you do. But so what do you got shoe wise? What are you wearing?
So these are, can you see these?
Yes, I can.
All right. Those are, so I'm not a gambler. I've been to Vegas twice.
Can you hold it to the side too?
Yeah.
There we go.
So there's a story for these shoes. So playing French roulette, and French roulette is a game like roulette, but you have more numbers and the odds are more against you. And so I started playing and I started hitting, and it went from where there was like three or four people at the table to then there was like 20 or 30. And I had no idea what I was doing, right? But I was winning, and all these people started betting where I was betting. And before I know it, I'm, $900 up. And so I'm like, I'm riding the Vegas high, first time in Vegas. I'm like, I'm good. I'm done. in my 20s, I had money for rent, and I'm like, I'm gonna go buy a pair of shoes. And so these were from the Venetian, but if you look, it has the Italian lion on it.
Oh,
and
wow.
That is the symbol of Venice. And so it means, I think it means power of the city or something. It's coined by Saint Mark, I want to say.
So if you can send Jay a photo of those shoes, and then Jay can put a photo of those shoes here with the lion, that'd be awesome.
I will do that. And these sparked my shoe collection. So now, because of these shoes, I have probably over 100 shoes that all have a different story of somewhere I went, whether it's cowgirl boots in Austin or something I got in Texas. But it started my shoe collection.
So you and I have something else in common. We're both Italian, but we both have a fetish for shoes. And
mine are not Jordans.
Well, I mean, I do have other shoes. A lot of people are like, yeah. Nah, you don't. And they only see me in Jordans. But I think this is my third pair of Jordans that I've worn today. I had one pair that I wore at a clinic. Then I had another pair I was wearing a little bit ago. I have Jordan sandals. But these, and I've worn these before. I think I wore these for the Ryan Ray episode. But they're the Jordan Taxis, Air Jordan 1 Lows. And obviously, kind of Maplewood colors and Pittsburgh Steelers colors. So
I like it. Very fitting. Gives it the jersey.
Yeah, for sure. So, Chandra, I want to thank you. I know you've got some dinner plans here with your neighbors. I want to respect your time, but it's been awesome, awesome having you on. This has been a truly authentic, genuine episode. I feel it energetically. I do. And I hope you can say the same thing. I hope our viewers can see that and feel that because you're such an amazing person with a great story. And you just have this amazing ability to like help others, particularly children. And if people wanted to get in touch with you and learn more about you and mindful adaptations, how would they do that?
So the best way is to email me, which is chandra@mindfuladaptations.com. Or they can check out my website, which is mindfuladaptations.com.
Okay, and Jay will put that all right here.
Yes, thank you. This has also been fantastic. I was really humbly excited to be on this podcast and for you to ask me. This has been really nice.
Yeah. And my request to you or is just like, you have a lot of followers out there and you have a lot of people, mutual friends that we graduated with, like share this, right? Share this episode so that we can help spread the word of what you're doing. I know a lot of your friends and my friends as well know who you are, what you do, but like, that's the whole point of this is like getting that word out there about the amazing things that people are doing, in this community. And you're, you know, from the Guys Mills, Meadville, Townville area, went to Maplewood, but like your impact is much further than that now. And that's just amazing to me. So I want to spread the word. Want to thank you. Want to thank our viewers for tuning in, watching. As always, leave comments, suggestions. I've had some people, former patients and guests that have said, hey, why don't you get this person on the show? So if anyone has any comments, suggestions, please share those. And Chandra, I want you to have a wonderful weekend. Go enjoy your neighborhood. I think you said you have a cookout or something like that. I'm going to go cook some outdoor pizzas with my family.
I know. Enjoy.
And yeah, just some family time. So thank you again. And have a great weekend.
Well, I have loved some fish around in the outdoors. Spent my time before I hurt my hip and my knee. When that doctor asked me, son, how'd you get in this condition? I says, hey,
tell me all about it, Doc.
As a disclaimer, this podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice from any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of their healthcare professional from any such conditions.